This is John Wilkerson, host of The Wired Homeschool. Have a seat in the front row. You're listening to Finding Christ in Cinema on the Great Commission Transmission Network.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we traverse the Ulonga and the Bora Rivers in one sitting as we look for Christian themes in the 1951 classic film, The African Queen. How is Charlie Allnutt's ministry different from Rose Sayers' ministry? How does it help us to better understand compassion? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 138. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
And I'm John.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, the plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
I snuck that one on you, John, last second. And so I'm going to point at him and see what happens.
Okay.
Brendan, we are joined in the studio today by our old friend and old cohort on many, many episodes ago, John Carney, city editor extraordinaire at the Shelbyville Times Gazette.
Shelbyville.
Yeah, again, Shelbyville. That's how you Yankees pronounce it. John, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
It has been a long time. Do you remember the last film that we all talked about?
We did The Princess Bride, but then I think The Wizard of Oz, I think, were the two that
I had both done. I mean, we're talking episodes 3, 4, 5, right around there.
Somewhere up there.
That's too long. That is too long. We are so happy to have you in the studio today because this type of film is right up your alley. John, you go ahead and tell the listeners what film we're going to talk about today.
We are talking about The African Queen.
1951.
Yeah.
Brendan, who's in this?
I don't know. I wasn't born then.
Oh.
This is Humphrey.
None of us were.
This
None
is Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn.
You guys ready to go to the theater?
But of course.
Absolutely.
World-renowned author C.S. Forrester's story, and filmed in the jungles and at the headwaters of Africa, the Dark Continent, in all the magnificence of color by Technicolor, comes the most exciting adventure ever screened.
You promised you'd go down the river.
There's death a dozen times over down the river.
You promised.
Well, I'm taking my promise back.
Filmed in the treacherous wilds of Africa and directed by John Huston, winner of a double Oscar award for The Treasure of Sierra Madre, against a savagely thrilling background, two people live a reckless adventure. Charlie Allnutt, lazy, gin-swilling, no better than he should be. And Rosie, straight-laced Rosie Sayers, who learns about life, all about it.
Well, I ain't sorry no more, you crazy, psalm-singing, skinny old maid.
Two people thrown together against their wills.
Get out.
In a stirring and pulse-pounding story known in fact or fiction.
Waiting for the supper, miss.
I'm the captain, that's who. I ain't taking you along. You'd only be in my way.
I suppose I was in your way going down the rapids. Then what you said to me back there on the river was a lie about how you never could have done it alone and how you lost your heart and everything. You liar. I never dreamed that any experience could be so stimulating.
What a film. Brendan, what'd you think when you first saw this in the theater with your popcorn and your junior mints and your
No.
Yeah, good one. Yeah. Yeah. No, the first time I watched it was this past week.
Really?
Yeah.
This is an all-time classic film.
I know. And you know, my generation, we just don't know what to do with these all-time classic films. We don't even watch them.
Enjoy them and love them and share them. That's what you ought to be doing.
Is that what you do with movies?
Well, okay, what'd you think when you were watching it? I mean, it's a lot different than the modern blockbuster films of today.
Sure, sure. What I enjoyed from it right off the bat was the character development between Charlie Allnutt and Rose Sayre. I thought, like the theatrical trailer described, they were put together in the situation against their will,
thrown into a situation.
Right. Yep, and they were, and just seeing how their relationship unfolded, from what it came into what it grew into. You know, that's a pretty powerful,
very pretty powerful storytelling.
Yeah.
John.
Well, and that's, you know, are we talking about the spiritual implications yet?
No, we are not.
No, we're not.
We're just
talking
fun.
About we're just talking about the movie. Yeah, it's a, you know, there are just so many wonderful moments in the movie. You know, the scene where, you know, he has to dive into the water to fix something with the boat, and he comes out and the leeches and I don't know. This is just two great personalities, you know, either one of whom can carry a movie, and you put them together, and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But in this case, it definitely works. It's definitely two characters that you come to care about and want them to survive and want them
blossom
to
not only survive, but to prosper.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And thrive, yeah.
Yeah, survive and thrive.
Hey, there you go.
John, you appear to be a lover of older film.
Yeah. I watch a lot of Turner Classic Movies. I've read different books. There's a wonderful book, I think it's out of print now, called The Hollywood Studios by Ethan Mordden, which was a wonderful guide to me. It was talking about sort of the house style of each of the movies of each of the studios and what they specialized in. And that was given to me as a gift many years ago. And it's, I've learned so much from it since then, since the original reading of it, as I've gotten to see more and more of the movies that were mentioned.
But have you always loved older film?
Since about the time of college, I was in charge of the campus movies in college, and there were a few that I had started to recognize then, and I enjoyed sharing those with my fellow students, most of whom did not care about old movies. But you know, that was just sort of right at the beginning of my awareness.
Blossoming into love of classic cinema.
Right.
You know, I grew up in Southern California and the greater Los Angeles region. All of our television stations, our major stations, came out of L.A. And on Sundays, there was a program hosted by Tom Hatton called Family Film Festival. And it was all old films.
Right.
And Tom Hatton, who we're all familiar with as a, as older folks may be familiar with, Brendan, you do continue on doing whatever you're doing.
Tune out of this part of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, he was a cartoonist and he was a film lover. But he would bring these films to the family every week and talk about them and give the trivia, the kinds of things that we do on Finding Christ in Cinema just by perusing Wikipedia and IMDb and those things. That's what he was doing, and he was instilling a love of these films, telling you why they were great films and why they are to be enjoyed and to be cherished and to be propagated. And that's really what developed in me. But I don't have the knowledge that you have, John, on these old films. And you have a particular book that you brought into the studio today that is tied directly to this film. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was also given to me as a gift many years ago. This is The Making of the African Queen. And the subtitle is Or How I Went to Africa with Bogart, Bacall, and Houston and Almost Lost My Mind by Katharine Hepburn.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's a very thin book. In fact, when I reread it this week in preparation for being here, I pretty much read it in one sitting. but it's got wonderful just behind the scenes photos and
anecdotes and all
and,
that.
And you can really hear Katharine Hepburn's voice as you read it, you know. You know, it's such a great story of them going to Africa. And the other interesting thing is, if you're a Clint Eastwood fan,
yes,
there is a Clint Eastwood movie called White Hunter Black Heart, which is basically a fictionalized story based on the making of this movie.
I haven't seen that.
It's Clint Eastwood is playing basically John Huston. They call him something different in the movie. But it's about how Huston really sort of saw this as a chance to go to Africa and go do some big game hunting. sometimes to the detriment of the movie, where he was sort of obsessed with a couple things, where he would you know... he was obsessed with a couple of particular conquests in the big game territory, and would sometimes be working on that.
So he said, have been "How can I go on a grand big game hunting adventure? I know, right. I'll get Hollywood to pay for it, and I'll make a movie while I'm there.
Right. Make a movie about
which is a classic film. Okay, and here's another thing that I want to touch on right now. This is very important for listeners of Finding Christ in Cinema because this movie centers around one of the characters is a Methodist missionary." Now, in studio today, one of our cast of characters is also a Methodist missionary.
Well, although I have to say, I have been on nine short-term foreign mission trips, and I value the experience, and I believe that there is something to be gained from that, but there is absolutely no way that compares with long-term missionaries,
which is what
the characters in the movie are.
Yeah.
And I am very careful never to fool myself that I have the kind of understanding of a place that I go that you know, the long-term, the professional missionaries have. So it's, you know, that's that same term, but in some ways I don't think of myself as exactly that same kind of missionary.
Just in luck, because here in these studios, anybody that travels in any way to go and minister and to be Jesus Christ, to be an ambassador of Jesus Christ is lauded. And a couple episodes ago here on Finding Christ in Cinema, we talked about Moana and the picture in that film that we saw of the waters, where the Polynesians considered the waters and the land the same thing. It's just another way to get one mode, you know, from one location to the other. And they were familiar with their paths. They were familiar with their way. And we likened that to the Great Commission. The Christians in the first century understood that you take any road that you possibly can, and along the way, you bring the good news.
Right.
That's how the gospel spread throughout the entire known world in that that first century. And we held up our brother David Gaddy from our other show,
The Theonauts,
over there in Texas, where David goes quite often. Over to Haiti. He traverses the ocean.
Hey,
of course, he flies over it. Haiti.
Hey,
and John, you do the same thing. And going in these places. Now, how many times have you been to Africa?
I have been to Kenya 5 times, and then this past November, I went to Sierra Leone.
Okay, now, Sierra Leone. Were any of those trips, were they just like this movie? The African Queen? No, nothing like it?
No, nothing like
it. No torpedoes or anything?
No torpedoes.
Homemade torpedoes.
Yes.
And kicking a boat engine.
Ah. Just tell us a little bit, real quick, what's it like to go to Africa and minister?
It's really an incredible, you know, because I've been in Kenya particularly. I've been in several different situations. We've been the host pastor that we would work with in Kenya has a church there in what's called the Kibera slums right outside Nairobi, which is like, you know, a million people living in 3 square miles.
Yeah.
And it's an incredibly moving area of, you know, poverty and want. And yet you see the people, have such, you know, faith, the people in the church that have such a positive attitude, which is not to minimize the very real consequences of the poverty that they're living in, but to say that they are able to find joy even in that terrible situation. And then also we have gone on trips to smaller communities out in the countryside in Kenya. And so that's, you know, that's quite a different situation to be in a little remote community, you know, where there's, you know, room for them to, you know, grow a few little crops or something like that.
What can a Christian learn? What can a Christian gain by going and ministering to others?
Well, you learn, you know, sometimes we pat ourselves on the back here in this country and we think we invented Christianity. You know?
Right, right.
We think we're God's country. You know?
You know, the cross of
Jesus. Most favored nation status.
Right,
The cross of Jesus looks awfully cold. It needs an American flag to keep it
warm. Right, you know what I mean? Yeah. And you realize that that here are people whose faith is very real to them and who are trusting God in very trying and challenging situations and the joy that they feel and the reality that their faith has to them, and it's a very humbling thing.
Yeah.
You look at it and you go, wow, you know, I you know, here I am, I, you know, I grumble if you know, the price of gas, you know, goes up by 2 cents or something. So you learn a lot about that. You learn a lot about the need, you know, the things that Jesus tells us to do as far as showing compassion and ministering to others.
Yeah.
You know, most of the trips where I've been, we've been working with a host church there in the country we travel to. If they want us to do some evangelism, you know, we've done, you know, a little bit of street preaching or you know, church services and things like that. But then we've also been teaching cottage industries or helping to set up a water purification system.
Yes.
Or practical things like that.
Oh, I love that you use the word practical.
You know, well, you know, it's all part of missions. I mean, you know, people think of missions as just preaching. And obviously that's, you know, obviously the most basic need that anybody has is the need to know God. But you know, that's not the only thing that missionaries do. And there are ways that you can go and be a part of meeting the needs and a part of bringing the worldwide church together.
Amen.
As we go and share knowledge and gain knowledge. And
I think those are all things that you're describing are the things that James talked about in his epistle.
Right.
You know, and talking about, hey, you know, isn't it the poor that have like the greatest faith and to go out and see that. So what you're telling us really is that not only are you out to minister to others, but in return, they are ministering to you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so do you think that I don't want to make a blanket statement here, so don't take this that way, but people that do not go out and experience those things and learn from those people, are we missing out on something?
Oh yeah. I think that there's, you know, and there are ways, you know, to do that, I think that's definitely something that would benefit any Christian who is able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's just spending a few days on some border town in Mexico. I've known people that have gone on
Brendan
a mission
does
trip.
That.
Yeah, yeah, where you've just gone, you know, just a little bit over into, you know, maybe it's close enough that you sleep in Texas and you're just going to during the day to Mexico. But or maybe not, you know, but just to experience another culture, to sort of shake loose that idea that we are the be all, or the we are somehow the capital of Christianity,
and that everywhere else is like us anyway.
Right.
Because
yeah,
you know, that's the main thing that I see. One of the main things is you learn that other people are not like you,
right.
And it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
My first mission trip that I ever went on was to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina.
Oh yes,
and it was even. See, Katrina hit in August of 2005. We went in June of 2006. and there were still places that needed so much help.
Yes.
And that kind of set the idea in my head that ministry isn't just about preaching. And like we've already alluded to, it's not just about preaching. It's about providing those physical needs, those practical needs that people need, like whether it's cleaning the water or building houses or something along those lines to provide those physical needs of survival.
And you also raised the point that domestic mission, there are many domestic missions opportunities too. Next month, you know, there's the way I first got involved in missions wasn't foreign missions. It was through an organization called Mountaintop that operates up on the Cumberland Plateau. And I will be going up there next month and spending a week, with teenagers from some communities, up in Grundy County that maybe don't have as many recreational activities as some of the ones from other areas. And so, there are domestic mission programs you can get involved in as well.
Look, James, let's go back to James. This sums it up. James chapter 2, verse 15. If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Right. We are told to care for the needs, the physical needs of others. That is how you show love.
Oh, but Michael, that's materialistic. We can't do that.
Well, James, take it up with James.
Take it up with James. Hey, so what about the African Queen?
Man, this movie was, I'm sitting here watching it again after so many years, and I don't know how long, and my dad likes to watch this movie, and it's on Netflix all the time. Friends, go and watch The African Queen right now. It's streaming on Netflix. And so many things that I love about this. First of all, it reminds me of the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland, which I grew up working on. Oh, my great-grandfather actually worked on that ride. I don't know what he did. He was an iron worker or something. But anyway, I have a – look at there. I have a connection. I'm 3 degrees from The African Queen.
3 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
And the African Queen.
And the African Queen.
Yes. And so the adventure. I am also just goo-goo gaga over anything that's in Technicolor. I love Technicolor. Why do I love Technicolor so much?
Don't look at me.
It looks like magic to me. I can't explain it. It's ineffable. I love Technicolor.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Okay. Give some thoughts. Shout outs, exciting things here before we try and jump into some Christian themes.
You go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to mention one thing that occurred to me earlier, and I want to make sure I get it out because I'm afraid I'll forget it later. If you like John Huston, who directed this movie, you mentioned Netflix. Netflix has an outstanding documentary right now that just premiered a month or two ago called Five Came Back, and it's about John Huston and four other directors and their service during World War II and how that affected them.
Oh, okay.
Where they went and they did propaganda films or documentaries or whatever for the military. They sort of set aside what they were doing in Hollywood. And it was Frank Capra, John Huston, John Ford, William Wyler, and George Stevens. And it's just an outstanding documentary.
Adding it to my watch list right now.
But it's really, really well done, really put together, and it shows how it affected them, and also how it affected some of their work after the war. It shows like the first thing that each of them made after they came back from the war.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Brendan, shout outs.
Hey, let's talk about Bogey. I was getting there.
No, you start
FCC's
off with that.
Very own Humphrey Bogart.
Yes.
As Charlie Allnut.
Oh, not yeah, Walnut. And all the kids love that.
Allnut.
We last saw Bogey in Casablanca, which we covered, a dozen episodes ago. Easy to find.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's there somewhere.
Okay, what did you think of old Charlie Allnut?
I liked him.
Yeah.
I liked him. Just his character, the way, and this might get into my point a little bit, but the way he interacted with the people versus the way Rose and Samuel interacted with the people at first.
Yes.
Very different. And I think Bogey carried that difference.
That's actually part of my point as well. What did you like about Humphrey Bogart in The African Queen, John?
Well, it's sort of an interesting portrayal for him because he starts out, very deferential. He calls her Miss. You know, he's obviously deferring to her, not necessarily happy about it, but deferring to, you know, you think of Bogart in so many other movies, Casablanca or The Maltese Falcon or whatever, and he's always strong and in control. Even when he's in danger, he's grungy. He's making some sort of quip. But here he's very sort of deferential. It's a different role for him, but yet he plays it very effectively.
Yes, I agree. Welcome to the menagerie,
Katharine Hepburn.
Oh wow! What'd you like about Rose Sayer?
Sayer.
Yeah.
First of all, I thought the trailer said Dorothy Sayer, and that's a completely different person.
It is. I agree.
But Catherine as Rose, I loved it. And again, because this story focuses on the two main characters, Charlie and Rose, both actor and actress had to bring everything to their role because they both undergo a sort of transformation.
Right.
And just like we said of Bogart, I think Catherine brought it as well.
Amen. John?
Well, you know, she is just such a unique, you know, unique character. You just sort of tend to root for her in everything she's in. But, it's that, you know, again, they both go through that transformation, and it's so effective. And they were, you know, in the making of book we were mentioning earlier, she didn't like the early parts of the script because she thought that, you know, the aspect of them falling in love was a little too sudden, a little too quick. And so you can sort of see everything that happens. It's sort of a believable transformation. It really is. It's not one of these things where you kind of get whiplash. You know, you've seen movies where you know, the bad guy suddenly repents or something like that. And mm-hmm. it's handled badly. And you think, no, that's not the way real people behave.
And I believe that people in 1951 in the theaters were rooting for them to fall in love on this journey, this shared flipsis that they are in. Real quick, Robert Morley as the brother, Reverend Samuel Sayer. Anything?
I wish he had more to do.
Right. Yeah.
He did. Right. His role was rather short, but it was necessary for the story to move on the way it did.
Right.
But I thought I enjoyed his acting.
Okay.
Yes. I do think I enjoy his acting.
Oh, yes. And a famous character actor
from
the UK. And I need to be keeping my eye out more on him. But we got to talk about some Christian themes. And we're just about out of time in this first segment. But we're going to focus a little bit on, when we get back on the other side of the break, this shared journey of these two totally different people from totally different backgrounds coalescing and coming together and loving each other, even if they bicker, you know, here and there. We see this journey against great odds, as a matter of fact. And so we want you to join us, friends, here on Finding Christ in Cinema. When we get back after the break, we're going to talk more about The African Queen from 1951. It's a classic. Everybody go out and watch this film. Brendan, having John in the studio today to talk about The African Queen has given us way too much to talk about in such a short amount of time, because to remind listeners, Finding Christ in Cinema is heard on our local radio station, Thunder Radio.
They threw out a fishing rod. Bubba did rebite.
And so now you get, you podcast listeners get this exclusive little segment here sandwiched in between the two main segments of the show. We're going to have to do feedback right now because we couldn't fit it in the mm-hmm. entire show. So, to make it official. Yes.
Who's first?
Who should we do first?
Well, I think it's obvious.
Okay.
Halt! Who goes there? It is I.
Creepy little monkey.
Yeah, the creepy little monkey that should have been on The African Queen.
No.
There he is. No. I found him. No.
You have two voting against you, Michael.
Oh, goodness. No. Patron Saint Philip is going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom. He left a comment on our last episode, Kubo and the Two Strings. That was Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 137. Get over to ChristInCinema.com and listen to that episode.
He says, "Hey guys, I loved this gorgeous film. I appreciate how spooky it is at times, but still fun for the whole family."
Yes, I agree.
"One thing I get from Kubo is the ending, when the villagers had a chance to exact revenge on the Moon King, but instead showed him mercy. Matthew 9:13 out of the net tells us, go and learn what this saying means. I want mercy and not sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners.
Amen.
The film made an interesting choice at that point, controversial for some because they fabricated a past and did not tell him the truth, which I understand that. Brendan interjection, I get that. I did appreciate the mercy shown him, and it reminds me of how merciful God is to me. And that's definitely the truth right there.
Amen.
Love the show, guys. Hashtag Mowilad Gimlet.
Yeah, we also got another voicemail, second week in a row, from patron saint John Wilkerson.
Hello, gentlemen. John Wilkerson here, just commenting on your episode on Kubo and the Two Strings. And as I listen to your review of it, wow, that's a mouthful.
He does it too.
I can't help but think and compare myself to the grandfather. Because as a father, I have an idea and an ideal of what my children should be like and who they should be and the birthright that they should have. And I can be misguided in that sometimes. And the forgiveness that Kubo exhibits to his grandfather is just wonderful. And I pray that my kids will forgive me because of the misdirection or misguided thoughts that I've had about their lives. So yeah, it was very, very touching to me, a very touching film to me, just because, like I said, I see so much of myself in the grandfather. That's it, guys. Keep up the great work. Love what you're doing. God bless. Bye-bye.
I just hope he never ends up killing anybody.
Hey, that's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. So we'll pray for you, John. But great thoughts, as always. Of course, what'd you think of that, Brendan?
He makes a good point.
Could you relate? We can all relate with the bad guys, can't we?
Of course.
Yeah. Great film. Great feedback. Thank you all for doing that in your special podcast. You know what? We may need to start doing this, Brendan.
I've considered it a few.
Well, why don't you share things with me?
Well, because today was a good opportunity.
I'm so thankful that you called that to my attention. I think that they are done talking about sports, the weather, latest news.
I'm sure the Nashville Predators have some sort of...
Aren't you supposed to say the Preds?
The Preds, whatever, yeah. Predators. Well, Shelbyville Shovel, so, you know.
Sourdough Preds?
Sourdough, that's not how that works.
All right, let's get back to the show.
What a malapropos.
And welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the show where we watch movies from the past and present, pull out some tools that you can use in order to share the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, with your friends and loved ones as you are sitting on your
double-decker couch.
Speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy, we were talking about that during the break. While you all were listening to news and sports and weather, we're talking Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2, and apparently there's a nod to Mary Poppins in there.
Yes.
Which
yes.
may be a little bit of a foreword here on Finding Christ in Cinema. We'll see what happens. Here coming up later on. Today we are talking about the 1951 John Huston classic film, The African Queen. A great adventure story, jam-packed with drama and thrills and intrigue and love. And love. You know, the only thing missing from this film, guys, is a monkey. Why wasn't there a monkey on The African Queen? Bogey needed a monkey. No sidekick?
No.
This movie didn't need a sidekick, huh? Because we have this development of these two characters. We had mentioned they came from widely different backgrounds. You have a straight-laced sister of a Methodist minister, and you have this boat runner. What's he running? What's he doing? I know he's bringing mail. Maybe he's just running whatever he can in order to make money. Right? Cigars and explosives and all these different things. But this film, to me, is another picture of the great persecution that that Christians were experiencing, the disciples of Christ in the first century. And this persecution that started, it says verbatim in Acts chapter 1, okay? And that day, a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem and wherever this sect of these weird Jews. They don't that now they're preaching these strange things. We need to kill them, right? Okay.
Silly Jewish
people. And that's what was going on in those days, in those times. And I think, you know, going back to part of our conversation about ministry, is that we have a tendency here in the 21st century to completely separate ourselves and to even forget and to even downplay what was going on in that first century.
Okay? Yeah. Today we think that we are persecuted if somebody wishes us happy holidays.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's persecution. You know? Oh, yeah.
And it's not even a pale imitation of persecution.
Right.
Not what these people were experiencing. And you can read the history books. You can read Josephus. You can read the New Testament and see the thread of persecution, of thlipsis, the Greek word, all throughout the epistles of the New Testament. In fact, they were encouraged over and over again in the New Testament to endure until the end. And Charlie and Rosie are a wonderful image of believers, again, with radically different backgrounds. Right. Jews and Gentiles, slaves and free, male and female, rich and poor. And they were encouraging and edifying and lifting up and loving one another and thereby bringing glory to the Father, right?
Going off of what you just said about Rosie and Charlie being of the same ilk but sprouting in two different directions, I kind of got the imagery of the prodigal son and the older brother.
Yes.
Both from the same father, except one went out and did his thing, and the other was kind of jealous about it. And in the movie, I felt like Charlie was out doing his, what Wikipedia calls, tramp steaming. He was just using the boat.
Okay. That was a lot quicker than what I tried to explain.
Doing odd jobs for whatever reason.
I could have just said tramp steaming.
There you go. Hashtag tramp steaming. And when Rosie sees how he interacts with the people, you can tell that she's a little embittered by it.
Yes. Yeah.
And she's like, well, he's over here. We're over here doing our part. Why, you know, what about us?
Right. She's sort of at the beginning, they're sort of looking down her nose a little bit about at him. And that's, you know, the thing that I had that made me think of was, you know, the Jesus, when Jesus talked to, you know, one of Jesus's most passionate, you know, issues that he raised in his earthly ministry was, you know, against the people who used religion as a wedge, who looked down on others. Not that there was anything wrong with holiness, not that there was anything right with sin, but the people who...
It's the attitude.
Yeah, it was the attitude. Right. I'm holier than you. And I was, you know, looking at Luke 18, the 9, the Pharisee and the publican. You know, where the Pharisee goes in to pray, you know, I'm glad I'm not like this sinner over there. And, you know, the publican is just, you know, Lord, have mercy on
me. Won't even look up, is beating his breast, you know, have mercy on me.
Right.
I think a really clear picture of that comes in one of the early scenes of the film when Charlie is invited to their house, to Rosie and Sam's house, and they're having tea and crumpets, a nice British tradition, and his stomach is over there growling.
Oh, he's so embarrassed. He's
embarrassed. He's practically starving.
Yeah,
because what does a tramp steamer have to eat other than what he just finds on
and
the river?
Cigars.
Right.
And cigars. cigars and gin. And I love that cocktail that he makes. A nice cup of river water and a shot
of
gin.
Nice brown cup of river water.
Brown cup, which oddly is blue when the camera's under it. But anyway, that's beside the point. But we just see that division between the two between the two cultures.
It's interesting. Getting back to the little making of book. When Katharine Hepburn was still trying to figure out how to play that character, especially at the beginning of the movie, John Huston told her to think of Eleanor Roosevelt and to think of, you always saw Eleanor Roosevelt, even in cases where she was obviously not happy, always had this sort of forced smile.
The polite smile,
smile.
Yeah.
And that was John Huston told her to think of Eleanor Roosevelt. And she says in the book, she goes, that's the best piece of direction I ever got. And so that's her at the beginning of the movie is Eleanor Roosevelt. She, you know, she's having to put up with this, dirty, disgusting.
Yes, and you guys are perfectly describing what it must have been like for these Jews that became Christians, that believed that Jesus was the promised Messiah. But they have this whole, hey, but we're Jews. And those are dirty Gentiles. Those are dirty Greek speakers over there, over and over again. I mean, even in the very beginning of the church, there was the uproar. What was that? Is that Acts chapter 6? For some reasons popping in my mind, where they were overlooking the Greek-speaking widows in the daily distribution of food.
Right.
Okay, that's the picture, and that's why they had to be encouraged over and over again. And John, you know, telling people, love one another. Getting back to James chapter 2, verse 8, one of our very favorite verses here. If you really fulfill the royal law according to Scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You do well. That's what you're supposed to be doing in order to be doing well in your walk along the way. And so this picture, this film shows those two completely different people. You have prim and proper, you have dirty and nasty, mm-hmm. coming together, working together in order to survive this persecution that they're under. It's a beautiful picture. In fact, I love the script of this film because they get a scene after the big falls, when they make it over the big falls, right? And you see the scene of Charlie lying in the arms of Rosie, and they're talking, and they're relishing and proud of the accomplishments that they're achieving together.
If it hadn't been for you, this couldn't be. Don't you feel proud of yourself?
Certainly not. Look at the way you kept the engine going. Look at how you mended the propeller. It wasn't me at all. I don't think there's another man alive who could have done it.
Right you are, Rosie, because no other man alive's got you.
John.
I'll never forget the way you looked going over the falls. Head up, chin out, hair blowing in the wind. The living picture of a heroine.
Fancy me a heroine. Oh, Charlie,
you've lost your mind. Listen to what he's saying to her and how she is responding back. It's all positive words. If it hadn't been for you, you know, this couldn't be. Don't you feel proud of yourself? Certainly not. Look at the way you kept the engine going. Look at how you mended the propeller. It wasn't me at all. You know, and he says, I just love this. I'll never forget the way you looked going over the falls. Head up, chin out, hair blowing in the wind. The living picture of a heroine. These are uplifting words. Mm-hmm. That's all that they are. And they're intended to build up one another. That's what Christians are called to do.
Right.
Lift up, build up.
And it also, they have been through a shared experience, and they understand sort of the universality of their situation. And you know, getting back to what we were talking about in the previous segment about mission trips, you know, you sort of understand that there are certain things that we all share as human beings, and that helps bring us closer together.
Amen.
And then when we're dealing with the unsaved, you know, you have to keep reminding yourself that we are all sinners, that we are all equally in need of God's grace.
All of our righteousness is as filthy rags.
Right. And that understanding of that universality brings us together.
Compassion.
Gesundheit.
Sorry. Thank you. I had some compassion stuck in my throat.
That has also been an ongoing theme here recently on Finding Christ in Cinema. 1 Thessalonians, one of the very first epistles written that we know of in the New Testament by Paul. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, he tells the Thessalonians, therefore, encourage one another and build up one another just as you are also doing. What you're doing, continue that, and in fact, increase it. Later on in the film, the African queen gets stuck in the reeds, and it ends up getting stuck in the mud. It is grounded, and they are in a real pickle, and Charlie Allnutt, hey, that almost rhymes,
it doesn't.
Well, he's been covered with leeches. And now it seems like he's coming down with a fever from overexertion, right? And he's lying down on the boat, and Rosie comes to offer comfort.
Daddy.
Fine specimen of a man I am, ain't I?
You're the bravest man that ever lived. You just overdo, that's all. What you need is a few hours sleep. There. Now you're all comfortable. Go to sleep, dear. When you wake up, we'll be on our way again.
Rosie.
Yes, Charlie.
You want to know the truth, don't you? Even if we had all our strength, we'd never get her off this mud. We're finished.
I know it.
But Rosie, I'm not one bit sorry I came. What I mean is, it was worth it.
This scene with the leeches is just one of the many, I would think, very artistically crafted images of compassion throughout this film. And we see, especially with the transformation of, I keep wanting to say Dorothy, of Rose's character.
Don't say Dorothy. Yeah.
Of Rosie's character, how she was very hands-off, but then as she got to know and spend time with Charlie, she became very hands-on in the in the literal sense, excuse me, but also in the spiritual sense.
Yes.
And you've got her taking the clumps of salt, patting them down on the leeches, and actually using her hand to rub in that salt to get the leeches off.
Yes.
And it was interesting for me, one of the threads that I followed when watching it through was seeing, you know, okay, what is her level of hands-on compassion? And it, for me, it started, at first there was the hands-off when they were having tea and crumpets at the house or whatever. But then it was first hands-on in a way when she invites Charlie in from the rain.
Yes, when it's great scene.
When it's raining on the river. And
she chases him out at first.
Yeah, she's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
But then she's
because of modesty and all. Exactly.
But then she realizes, okay, look, it's raining. I've got the
shelter. How could I?
Exactly. And for me, that's where the snowball starts. Starts forming. And it's interesting to see how it all culminates.
1 Thessalonians chapter 5, again, verses 14 and 15, again out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. See that no one repays another evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people. Does that mean that you're going to do that perfectly every step along the way? No! But what does it mean? It means be mindful of these things, do these things. If you stop doing these things, become mindful of them again and do them. Or if you slip and stumble, that's all right. Pick yourself up and continue on doing this. This soundbite is beautiful. They're there, dear. What does he say? Fine specimen of a man I am. What is her response? You're the bravest man that ever lived.
Yeah.
Is that true? Probably not. But it's the words that needed to be said. It's what she felt, right? And he needed her. She's building him up, encouraging him. You're sick right now. You just got sucked dry by leeches, all kinds of nasty things. You're the bravest man I ever knew. All you need is a few hours sleep. And you know, and when you wake up, we'll be on our way again. And I love what happens. You want to know the truth, don't you, Rosie? Even if we had all our strength, we'd never get her off this mud. We're finished. And what does she say? I know it. I already knew that. But I'm not going to say those things to you. I'm building and encouraging you because you are the bravest man that I ever knew, that ever lived. Beautiful, beautiful scene, which is culminated by immediately she gets on her knees.
Dear Lord. We've come to the end of our journey. In a little while, we will stand before you. I pray for you to be merciful. Judge us not for our weakness, but for our love. And open the doors of heaven for Charlie and me.
What a beautiful prayer.
Man.
Judge us not for our weakness, but for our love. Let's go to the upper room. Can we go to the upper room? We haven't been there in quite a while, Brendan.
We're already here.
Yeah, well.
Oh, you mean in the... Oh, okay.
In John chapter 13, real simple. chapter verses 34 and 35, a new commandment. Jesus says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. New King James, they goofed this up. I shouldn't be reading that other Nicodemus.
The nearly King James nearly version. King
that's
James.
That's my problem. But then verse 35, by this, by what? By this love. By this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Are you going to stumble and fall sometimes? Yes, you are. But love covers a multitude of sins. That's what Rosie is pleading with God. Judge us by our love. One more verse that I want to share with you. Well, maybe two. No, James. Let's go back to James. I'm in a James mood today. Chapter 1, verses 2 through 4.
Martin Luther would not be happy.
Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. What does Charlie say? You know what? We're finished, but I'm not one bit sorry I came. I'm joyful. What I mean is, it was worth it. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, which is the word means a putting to proof. Put your money where your mouth is really what that is. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. What is this perfect result? Is love. By this will everyone know that you're my disciples if you have love for one another. That's what they show us in this film. These two completely different people overcoming obstacles, learning to lift up and care for and carry and love one another. Mm-hmm. That's my thoughts for this film. You guys bring it on home. Anything? Questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
I got a lot, but I can see the clock.
Oh, so no, continue on.
Oh, I think it's interesting that this whole journey starts off with Rosie wanting to avenge her brother.
Yep.
And it almost presents the idea that revenge is a luxury. It almost seems like the poor people, and even Charlie himself, they're not concerned with revenge. They're just concerned with moving on. Whereas someone with like Rosie in the beginning of the film, she feels, you know, like anyone would feel after someone had just killed your brother.
Yep.
And she's filled with all this rage, and she wants justice.
She wants vengeance.
Yeah, well.
Vengeance is mine.
Well, that's true. And you'd think with her being a missionary, she'd know that. But
well, hey, it's human nature.
It's a human nature thing. Yeah, exactly. But I just think it's very interesting that that the film posits that, that
you're
idea.
Right. You're right. You Absolutely. Know? You know what another neat thing about this movie is that directly after this last soundbite that we listened to, here comes God.
Oh, yeah.
The God in the machine.
Yeah.
Let's discuss that for just a moment.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Of course, they think that they're through. They think that there's no way for them to get out of the mud. And then they go to sleep and the rains come and it lifts the boat up out of the water, which is interesting because, you know, so many modern day writing teachers would call that lazy storytelling, that you're supposed to, the characters are supposed to resolve their own situation. And that when you have something miraculous come in from outside like this, it's, you know, like you say, Deus Ex Machina, God in the machine, and that it's lazy storytelling. And sometimes it can be, but we as Christians can also see that as a powerful analogy of how we are insufficient. You know, they're saying we can't go any farther, and you're right. I can't go any farther, but God can. You know, God can come in and forgive me and take me the rest of the way. And that is the key message for us as Christians, is that you know, we are insufficient. We are incomplete without God, without His grace, His forgiveness. Without a relationship to God, we are incomplete. And so this moment like this, where they've done as much as they can, But that's okay because God can do the rest. God can pick up the boat and take them the rest of the way down the stream.
It could be considered that those literary teachers who say that the Deus Ex Machina is contrived and lazy storytelling, it could be also that they also personally believe that man is responsible for his own things, yeah, and man is sufficient enough. Yeah. So to tell a story where man is insufficient is counterintuitive.
Right.
So it's just interesting how that thought is developed.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can probably all think of examples where it can be used in a lazy sort of way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just, oh, yeah. Oh well, gee, yeah. I guess we better resolve this story somehow.
Yeah. Even the Greek storytellers. You know.
Brendan, we just experienced this recently on our other show, the Secret Fire podcast, mm-hmm, in the Barrow Downs.
Yeah.
Our hobbits are done for. Frodo is not going to be able to fight off these Barrow Wights. His three companions are laid out in funeral garb, ready to be sacrificed by these evil spirits that are inhabiting the barrows. But then Frodo remembers this rhyme that Tom Bombadil, the enigmatic Tom Bombadil, mm-hmm, taught him. Frodo recites that, and here comes the Deus Ex Machina, right? I can't say that. Here comes the God in the machine. And Tolkien did that also at the end of the story with the eagles coming to rescue Sam and Frodo from certain death and doom from lava and, mm-hmm, and whatnot. And people love to say, oh, well, why couldn't the eagles have come all along? Because it wasn't time for the eagles to come. This Tolkien coined the term eucatastrophe. And well, in fact, here's a quote by him. I coined the term Are our eyes our own unique New York? I coined the term eucatastrophe, the sudden hap. I have to take a break from the show every once in a while.
First day with a new tongue. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The sudden happy turn in a story which pierces you with joy that brings tears. That's what the God in the Machine is. It is the impossible.
And that's definitely what the rain was on the river.
And there's another example of it in this film. Oh, and I love, they're about to be executed.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Charlie want to do? Who's Charlie thinking of? Rose. Is he thinking of himself?
No, he's thinking of Rose.
Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And throws that an enemy captain a curveball. Can you marry us?
Wait, really quick.
Yeah.
I now pronounce you man and wife. Man and wife, proceed with the execution.
Yes. And then comes the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Which I saw a note somewhere, and I meant to, it was something that there was a link, and I never clicked on the link, that apparently that would not have been true. He could not have married them. But I didn't click on the link to find out the details of that.
Well, we won't be too critical of John Huston in that case. Guys, this is a great film for Christians to watch, to learn about our faith better, and to better represent Jesus Christ to our unbelieving friends and loved ones as we're sitting on our
double-decker couch
watching 1951's The African Queen. This is what God expects of us. This is what Jesus is, and this is what we are to do as Christians. We got to move on, Brendan. Do you have any idea what we're going to do next week?
Let's just go ahead and do Mary Poppins and then Saving Mr. Banks.
Okay, he made an executive decision.
There you go.
John, thank you so much for joining us today and adding to this conversation and all the things that you brought to the table.
It was a pleasure to be here. I love talking about this movie.
Yeah. We'll have you again on real soon. And in the meantime, Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Saturday, Lord willing, at around 1 p.m. Eastern time, except for today. You can join us for live video on our live page at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Now, to witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational digital ministry, including all 138 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema and the list of films we've covered, visit our website at christincinema.com. Send us email to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
Or you can call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN or the emergency backup hotline where Humphrey Bogart himself is waiting on the African
Babbling,
Queen.
Bumbling band of baboons.
At 507-407-4286. Let's say you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can go to iTunes, you can go to Stitcher, you can go to TuneIn Radio, and you can go to Google Play Music and search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
the Theonauts,
and our super duper secret Tolkien centered show, The Secret Fire Podcast, get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
The African Queen was tied to an anvil.
No! And that is a wrap!
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission. This is your Great Commission transmission.